You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Thursday, October 25th, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Cerretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film Senior Writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Okay, guys, we have a lot of news going on. I'm not sure what is going on with Hollywood, but it's just been very busy as of late. So let's just dive into it and let's start. We have 2 days worth of news because yesterday we did the Halloween spoiler filled podcast. So let's talk about something that broke yesterday, and that is that Disney is developing a Pirates of the Caribbean reboot with the Deadpool writers. Chris, tell us about it.
That's really all we know at this time. So Pirates of the Caribbean, as we all know, has been a huge hit for Disney, but the most recent one wasn't that big of a hit. And right now the future of the series is in doubt. So it looks like rather than keep the series going as it is, Disney is exploring the option to reboot it with Deadpool writers Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick. And you know, it's not clear yet if this is going to be a complete reboot, as in they're going to recast it completely and not even bring back Johnny Depp, or it's really up in the air at the moment. But all we know is they're definitely looking into the idea of rebooting this and starting fresh.
What do you think of these guys, the Deadpool writers, with this property?
I don't dislike their work. I think they're fine. I think they're not really right for this. I mean, you know, I know them primarily from Deadpool, and they wrote Life, that, you know, that alien knockoff, and
Zombieland, right?
Yeah, they wrote Zombieland, and those films are really like, they border on either comedic or really dark, and I feel like Pirates of the Caribbean needs to have like an Indiana Jones feel. It needs to be very like adventurous, and I don't know if they can pull that off. So I don't know.
Ben, do you think that Disney will reboot the character of Captain Jack Sparrow, like maybe even do like a younger version of him, or do you think this is going to be something totally different?
I think that character is so linked to Johnny Depp in people's minds that they would probably need to pick a different pirate character to center this around. Because, like, the idea of recasting everyone except for Johnny Depp, they've kind of done that already within this continuity of the Pirates franchise as it exists right now. So I feel like, and especially with Johnny Depp being sort of as toxic as he is, right now, I mean, obviously, like, some studios are, you know, Warner Brothers in particular with the Fantastic Beasts franchise are sticking by him, and like they're pretending like it's business as usual, so they could be sort of laying the foundation for Disney to just, you know, pick up as if everything is totally fine and maybe keep him around. But I feel like it would probably be smarter to just wipe the slate clean entirely and try to create a new version of that, or maybe not in that same mold, but a different kind of pirate character to lead a franchise.
Yeah, and I think they would, you know, not want to touch Depp with this new version. I'm actually wondering, I mean, you do mention a new character at the Disneyland and Disney World theme parks. They recently took a character, a popular character, who was known as the Redhead. She was a wench in one of the scenes, an auction scene, and they basically made her a pirate. She's now Red with two Ds, the pirate, and they've even given her a walk-around character at the theme parks. And now with, you know, I feel like we're a few years into this trend of Hollywood kind of rebooting franchises with female-led casts. I kind of wonder if the the pirate might be what they might focus on. And I also wonder, like, is there a different angle to tackle this with? The Pirates of the Caribbean series so far has kind of been set, you know, been a period piece of sorts. And I almost wonder is, like, could there be an angle, not that this would be good, but could there be an angle about, like, you know, a family that is goes to Disneyland and rides the ride and somehow gets sucked into the world of pirates or something like that. Huh. Do you know what I mean?
Interesting. Yeah.
I don't know. I know that's like more Jumanji-ish and probably not what people are looking for, but...
Well, the red thing is interesting, though, because traditionally pirate stories have been told from a male perspective, right? There's like the raping and pillaging is like part of it, and approaching it with a female lead might, you know, allow them to open up the storytelling possibilities to give us a totally new kind of pirate story that we've never even seen before. So that might be like a smart thing from a creative standpoint, not just like a cynical, oh, let's reboot this with a female lead. Oh, yeah. Kind of thing. It might actually be one of the smartest things they could do here. Yeah.
It's not like the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise was the most realistic or, you know, based on the real pirates of this world kind of thing. So
right.
they could definitely do that. But, you know, speaking of theme parks, some news hit a couple days ago about this Marvel-themed land that they're building at Disney California Adventure. They're building on the site of A Bug's Land. So John Lasseter's area is being replaced. Last time I was at the park, it was funny because there's this whole, you know, where A Bug's Land is, there's this whole gate, this whole fence, and it just says Stark Industries on the fence. And, well, this new report that comes from WDW News it basically outlines what rides we can expect from this new land. Of course, this is not confirmed, but the site has had some good info in the past. They basically say that it's going to happen in two phases, which is something we expected. The first phase is going to open in 2020, basically right after Star Wars Land opens, so that they can get some crowds to the other theme park away from Disneyland and you know, the massive cluster that's going to be. And the second phase is going to open a year or two later. Basically, what they say is that this themed land is going to be a central hub where there's like this Avengers symbol, and it's almost promoted as like the team's California campus. So it's still taking on that California theme of the theme park. And what people probably are interested in, they claim that there's going to be a Spider-Man interactive screen ride where It's Tough to Be a Bug was located. So there had been these rumors that there was going to be the Spider-Man roller coaster. There's these patents that Disney took out that basically is, if you can imagine what a roller coaster would be like, as if there's a track, and then there's a pendulum hanging from the track where the riders would be, and they would be swinging from side to side over a projection of New York City, or, you know, a metropolis city. And apparently that's not what's happening according to this report. According to this report, it's going to be something more like Toy Story Midway Mania, where guests have web shooters and are shooting, you know, criminals with the web shooters as the ride goes by a screen. I'm kind of wondering if this report has things mixed up, and if what has actually happened is that roller coaster ride that we've previously talked about, that the pendulum swinging roller coaster ride, that the riders were gonna have are gonna have web slingers shooting at interactive screens. We don't know. The other news is that there's gonna be a Doctor Strange stage show. Disney likes to do these things at the theme parks where they like invite kids up and to be part of the show. They have this whole Jedi training academy where kids can kind of train the Jedi, and then actually go in a lightsaber battle with like Darth Maul and Darth Vader and stuff like that. This is kind of like they have a version of that on the cruise ships, that basically Doctor Strange teaches the kids how the ways of you know, magic, and apparently they're going to move that show from the cruise ships. They're going to adapt it for the theme park, and what this story is claiming is phase two is going to be this Avengers roller coaster that we've talked about in the past, which basically will take you into the world of the Avengers. It's if anybody listening to this has ridden Harry Potter and the Escape from Gringotts over at Universal Studios in Orlando, this is kind of like Disney's version of that. It's a roller coaster dark ride, so it has scenes, but it's also a thrill ride. It's a combination, you know, it's that great combo of both, kind of like how Radiator Springs Racers and Cars Land is kind of like both a dark ride and a thrill ride. And they also have some details on some shops and foods and stuff like that. You can read my whole write-up on SlashFilm.com. Ben, you are located in the California area. I know you don't go to Disneyland as much as me. You don't have an annual pass. But is something like Marvel Land interesting to you?
Yeah, definitely. I think that pendulum experience you were talking about, I'm already imagining me vomiting all over the place or something like that. Something happened to me when I don't know, I must have been when I turned 20 or something like that, where like a biological shift happened and I could no longer handle roller coasters the same way that I could as a kid. Like, it never used to bother me, but now I don't know, like the motion sickness, and especially with the screens and stuff, like like Star Tour, the old school Star Tours ride, and like those experiences where you're just like sitting there like jostling around while also watching a screen, I can't handle it anymore. But the Toy Story Mania, or whichever one you mentioned, where that one's like currently at California Adventure, I think those kinds of experiences are really cool, and I can definitely very easily see them, you know, basically just outfitting everyone with digital web shooters and letting people go to town that way. And it seems like it would be I don't know, a kind of a cool experience, and maybe a little bit more family friendly. Like, everybody could ride it instead of just the thrill seekers. I don't know. What do you think? What are you most excited about in that batch, Peter?
Well, I will say this batch is kind of underwhelming. It is, you know, this land is replacing A Bug's Land, which is primarily the family-friendly area of Disney California Adventure. So I guess it makes sense to make family-friendly rides like that. I don't know. The Spider-Man roller coaster, you know, pendulum ride, whatever it is, sounded exciting to me. I'm also like you. I don't love roller coasters, but I can't even imagine if it's the case that it is misconstrued, that you will be on that thing shooting a web shooter at like screens and stuff. Like, I feel like I would be too busy screaming and trying to, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I'm really curious how this can turn out, because it's weird. Disney is doing, on one side of things, Disney is making these immersive worlds like Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, where you're going to step inside the Star Wars galaxy and Pandora, the world of Avatar, where, you know, you basically get to visit Pandora. And then on the other side of things, they, like, you know, just rethemed Paradise Pier as Pixar Pier, which it feels like something almost something like Universal would do. It feels, and when I'm getting vibes of this Marvel Land, I'm getting vibes of, I'm sure you've gone to Islands of Adventure in Universal in Orlando, right?
Yes, I love that place.
Yeah, they have a Marvel superhero island there, which no offense to that, I mean, because the Spider-Man ride there is incredible. The Hulk roller coaster is fun. I won't ride it. It is more of a traditional, almost like Six Flags like theme park. It doesn't feel immersive in a way. It just feels like rides, and it's like a cartoony like street. And I'm kind of getting the impression from this, but you know, we're in early days. You know, D23 is around the corner, and I'm sure they will announce stuff there and show us some concepts that will be exciting. Chris, are you at all excited about Marvel Land?
Absolutely not. I don't know if I'll ever go there, and I don't like roller coasters. I am excited for that Indiana Jones land. That sounds kind of cool just because I like Indiana Jones, but yeah, I'm not into this really.
Yeah. I'm excited to find out what it all entails. But let's move on to something you're excited about. You've been talking a bunch about this new Netflix show, The Haunting of Hill House. It's very successful, very popular. All my friends, my girlfriend's watching it. I dropped out of the first episode, and I'm regretting it at this point because everybody's telling me that it's pretty great. And I know you did as well. It's so great that they might be, you know, there's already speculation on if they make a season two, what will it be? So, Chris, what will it be?
Well, thankfully, Mike Flanagan, who directed The Haunting of Hill House, said that if season two happens, it's not going to focus on the main characters of season one, who are they're the Crane family. And I'm very happy about this because the first season is pretty much it's self-contained. You know, it tells one story, and by the time the season ends, that story is wrapped up. And I there's nothing I hate more than a show that tacks on a second season just because they feel like they have to. Like, I loved that Sharp Objects is like a one and done, and I'm glad they're going to do the same thing with this. So if there is a second season, they're going to turn it into like an anthology where it focuses on new characters, which I'm all for.
So have there been other families that have lived at this Hill House that they can explore?
I mean, the house in the movie, I mean, the show is very old, so they could always do that. And Mike Flanagan even said they could always just do a completely different location. Like, it doesn't actually have to be Hill House. Sort of like how The Terror is doing. Season one of The Terror was set, you know, in the Arctic, and one of the ships was named The Terror, and that was the name of the show. But season two is not going to have anything to do with that at all, but it's still called The Terror. It's just focusing on whole new characters.
So I'm assuming that's – would you want to see a season two? Like, I know you are a big fan of season one. Is this like a thing where you don't need another season, or you would like to see an anthology?
I definitely don't need another season if they're bringing the Crane family back, which they're thankfully not. But if they do a season two and Mike Flanagan is involved, I'll definitely watch because I feel like he's the key to making it work. Like, if he's not directing it, I probably would be less interested. But as long as he comes back and as long as he stays true to that word of focusing on new characters, I would definitely be for another horror show from him on Netflix.
I might have to actually bite the bullet and watch the show. Especially if they do a season two, because I know Kitra's going to want me to watch it. Ben, have you started watching the series at all?
I have not. It's in my queue. But yeah, like you, I've heard really good things from a lot of people. I just haven't had the time to. I just started watching Maniac. I'll probably talk about that more on the water cooler. But I'm a little bit behind in terms of Netflix stuff. They just drop so much content all the time.
Yeah. No, it's pretty insane. Let's talk about the girl in the spider's web. What is the subtitle? The Dragon Tattoo Story?
Or yeah, I think
a Dragon Tattoo Story. This is in that universe, but it's not a sequel to the David Fincher movie from a couple years ago. We've been kind of wondering, like, if this movie is any good. And the first screenings happened. Where in Rome, I think?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, and you wrote up a write-up, you know, rounding out the few reviews that we actually have. Is this movie worth seeing, Ben?
It seems like sort of a mixed response. Kate Erbland at IndieWire singles out Claire Foy's performance as Lisbeth Salander. She's the new girl with the dragon tattoo, and says that she's basically really great. She's, you know, just as good in this movie as she is in Damien Chazelle's First Man, according to Kate Erbland. And but like, unfortunately, she says that the story is sort of laden with undercooked revelations, excuse me, and loses much of its momentum during this saggy middle section. It's sort of like reactions are sort of all over the place. Like, somebody at the Hollywood Reporter says that it's edgy and action-packed, and Fede Alvarez, who's the director of a movie called Don't Breathe that came out a couple years ago, he's stepping into the director's chair for this film, and Alvarez's direction keeps the tension high through a slew of ever more improbable threats to Lisbeth and her allies. But then over at Variety, a critic there is the harshest of all of the reactions that I've seen so far, saying that while the movie delivers some big bang thrills, the entry feels like a betrayal to the character of Lisbeth Salander, because it, quote, reduces her to a quirky Batgirl-like figure, soft-pedaling her feminism, practically eliminating her queerness, and tossing in an American so the U.S. can save the world. So, I mean, it's really, like I said, kind of a mixed bag. I saw about 30 minutes of early footage from this, not too long ago. I think I talked about it on the podcast, and I was very interested to see this new take on the character. Somebody else tweeted that it reminded them of like a James Bond kind of thing, and that's the impression that I got watching a little bit of that early footage. So I don't know, Alvarez's direction in this looked to me very sleek and slick and sort of like this icy Bond style thing. I don't know how well people are going to react to that who are like big fans of this particular franchise, but in terms of like maybe grabbing new audiences who haven't seen the Fincher version or haven't seen the original Swedish trilogy, maybe that's what they're going for here. Although, as you just alluded to, the title with this ridiculous subtitle means that they're really trying to hammer home the idea that this is part of the same world. So I don't know what Sony is really doing with this, but Chris, what do you think about this?
I think I'm going to have to wait for Blu-ray for this one. I never read the books, and I don't really care about the original films, but I really liked the David Fincher movie, and I liked how almost it felt very subversive for a studio movie, that Fincher film, and this just looks like the Hollywoodized version that, you know, that older film could have been when Hollywood remade it. And Fincher meant it to eke out this non-Hollywood film, but now they're just making this sort of clean cut, simple, dumbed down version. And it seems really weird to me that it looks so much like an action film, because, you know, that Fincher film is not an action film. It has action in it, but it's like a thriller. And this just looks like a straight up, it looks like a Bourne sequel, and I'm really not into that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm that interested in this film as well. But let's move on to a bunch of horror movies that are getting resurrected from the dead. Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the cult classic, and Critters. Both movies are in the works at Sci-Fi. Chris, tell us about it.
Yeah, so Sci-Fi is close to getting the rights to both Critters, which is a film that spawned several sequels, one of which had Leonardo DiCaprio in it, believe it or not, and Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which had no sequels but should have. And there's not like a whole lot of specific details yet, but all we know is that they're hoping to just turn them into new sci-fi movies. And this could go either one of either ways. It could go you know, somewhat fun, or it could go terrible, like the Sharknado films. It's interesting that they're going after these films because these aren't films exactly known for their quality. They're very cheesy, schlocky horror films. So my guess is they're going to approach them in a very ironic, comedic way, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of the sci-fi movies. Like Sharknado, I did love watching Killer Clowns from Outer Space as a kid, and Critters terrified me. I think that's one of the Critters movies. Is that like the one where they come out of the toilet?
That's Ghoulies.
Or that's Ghoulies.
Yes. Ghoulies, okay, they'll get you in the end, as the tagline says.
Get you in the end. Okay, it was Ghoulies that terrified me as a kid. I was afraid to go to the bathroom on the toilet. But I did also watch Critters. Ben, do you have any love for these franchises?
I definitely have a lot of love for Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I that was one of the first movies that I came across as a kid or a younger movie watcher where I was like, what in the hell is happening here? And
I love that they're just like putting people in like these cotton candy pods.
Yeah, it's completely ludicrous. If you've never seen the original, I would highly recommend just checking it out, just for the sheer audacity of it. But yeah, I'm sort of hesitant to see them tackle a new version at sci-fi. I'm just not sure. You know, it's like Buckaroo Banzai or something. Like, I don't know if any new version at this point is going to come close to the novelty of the original.
And that original film, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but didn't it use like stop motion animation to like do the faces of the clowns?
There's a scene with stop motion animation, but the clowns themselves are like
big. It was all practical.
There's like rubbery practical heads. Yeah.
Maybe I'm just thinking that one scene. I'm kind of worried if they do a remake of this that it won't be practical, that it'll be like CG clown heads and stuff like that. I know that for Universal's Halloween Horror Nights in Orlando this year, they had a scare zone based on the Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which got a lot of like hype. Like, I don't think Universal was even expecting it. Like, people were just excited to go to this event just for like one of these small scare zones, not even a haunted house. And I've heard that they've had trouble with too many people just like hanging around that scare zone because they love that franchise. And I almost wonder if like this is like something like this came out of that like sci-fi was like, look at this, people are loving this property, they have a nostalgia for Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and that's how this came about. But I guess it's good that sci-fi is branching beyond the Asylum-esque kind of films, right?
Yeah, and maybe if it gets more people to check out the original, it's probably a good thing, right, Chris?
I guess. Like Peter has said, I agree with Peter that it's, and I think you said this too, where it's going to be almost impossible to recreate the quote unquote magic of the original film. Like, that original film is such a testament of its era, and I feel like anything they do now is going to be like intentionally stupid. You know, the original film, it's funny, but it's not like trying to be stupid. They're trying to make a movie. And I feel like any remake is going to be like nudging you in the ribs every 5 seconds. Like, ha ha ha, get it? Like, I don't want that.
Yeah. I don't want that either. And okay, let's move on. We've been talking a lot about this Joker movie that is in production with Joaquin Phoenix. It has now cast Bruce Wayne and Alfred. Ben, what is going on here?
Yeah, so Dante Pereira Olsen, a young child, and a middle-aged actor named Douglas Hodge have been cast in this Joker film, playing a young Bruce Wayne and a middle-aged Alfred Pennyworth, respectively. The reason that this matters is because, as far as I know, a lot of the development of Joker has been, like, throughout the development of this movie, it's been compared to The Killing Joke, which is a Batman graphic novel that depicts a version of the Joker's origin story. And in that story, Batman is sort of instrumental in the transformation of this failed comedian character, who's in the movie going to be played by Joaquin Phoenix, into the Joker. So Batman, as the superhero that we know him as, is there when this character falls into this chemical drainage system and basically becomes turns into the Joker. But Dante Pereira Olsen is a very, very young kid. So that means that an adult Batman is probably not going to be in this movie, unless there's like a huge time jump and another character is going to be cast as Batman that we don't know about yet. So it pretty much means you can scrap that possibility of Batman factoring into the creation of the Joker in this movie. So I'm just this entire movie still continues to baffle me.
But, I mean, we could see the other thing, right? We could see the thing that we've seen a bunch of times now, where the Joker is the inciting incident of creating Batman by killing his parents, right?
Right. Yeah, that could be it, and that seems to be likely because this kid is so young that would be around the age that we've seen Bruce Wayne in the past in the comics and the previous yeah. movies and stuff like that. Watch his parents get gunned down in an alley, you know, in front of him. So I guess all signs are pointing to another Thomas and Martha Wayne murder scene coming up in this movie.
But I'm betting that scene happens very late into this film, and it, like, this is what brings Joker to that point. That, like, you know, it's a point where I think, you know, sends those two characters in, you know, very opposite directions. So it could be interesting, but these are also not big actors, so I don't expect, like, you know, there to be a sequel starring these two, right?
Right, yeah, I think you're probably right about that. And, you know, we don't even know if there's going to be a sequel to this movie at all. It's supposed to be the first of the Warner Brothers and DC films sort of, like, non-canon, like, non-normal continuity timeline DC movies. So these are, as far as we know, these are basically considered one-offs. But I guess if any of them does, you know, major box office, they could always come back for another sequel.
I don't think anybody over at DC knows exactly what's going on at this point anyways. But let's move on to our final story, and that is George Miller has finally found his Fury Road follow-up. Chris, tell us about it.
Yeah, the film is called 3,000 Years of Longing, and it's apparently a epic romance starring Idris Elba and Tilda Swinton, and it's about a genie, and that's all we know. We don't know who's playing the genie. It could be either of those actors. It could be a completely different actor. We really don't know. And
I could totally see Idris Elba as a genie.
Yeah, he'd be a good genie, and so I think Tilda Swinton would also be a good. They're both actors who could do really good jobs as genies, and so maybe that's why they were cast for this film. The only real details we have, other than that, is that it's supposedly unlike any film George Miller has made before. But that sort of sums up his career. I mean, his career is very eclectic. I mean, he has the Mad Max films. He has Happy Feet. He has Babe, Pig in the City. He has The Witches of Eastwick. Like, none of those movies are anything like each other. So it just seems like this is par for the course. And I'm excited. I'm glad he's working it. I wish it hadn't taken so long, but I'm very excited to see whatever he does next.
Yeah, me too. So we don't know if this is like an adaptation of the Arabian Nights, like kind of Aladdin story.
No, it's really all under wraps. I mean, the story first broke, all we knew was the title. And then a few hours later, we learned that it was about a genie and who was going to be in it. But that's really all we know at this time.
Ben, any thoughts on this?
I'm hoping both of them are playing genies, and it's like they're trying to get to each other while having different masters, you know, whisked around the globe and all of that stuff. That would be pretty cool. I think it's really awesome that we have no idea which of these two actors is going to be a genie. Like, the idea that it's equally viable for both of them to play genies is just sort of hilarious to me.
Yeah. Now I'm really curious what this is. I don't know. Yeah. I'm curious. It's also interesting that usually we don't get a project like this announced where it already has like a slate of actors and stuff. Like, they've kept this pretty quiet, which is kind of strange because everybody's been wondering what George Miller was going to do after Fury Road. But I think we're all excited, right?
Yeah, and Chris, do you know if these original reports made any references to the Mad Max franchise? Like, I know that George Miller sort of had this on-again, off-again thing with an actual Mad Max Fury Road sequel. Is there any mention of that anywhere?
No, there's nowhere on that. I mean, and as for this film, it doesn't even have, like, a home yet. There's no distributor yet, so it's very early stages. But it's supposedly he's going to start filming this next year. So if there is going to be a new Mad Max film, it's not going to be for a while.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's Slash Film Daily. Chris, where can we find more of you online?
I'm at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at cevangelista413. And please write in, for Chris Evangelista's advice corner, which we'll get to sooner or later.
Yeah, sooner or later, when this news cools down, we'll actually get to it. We actually have a few letters already, so it's building up. Ben, where can we find you?
You can find me at SlashFilm.com as well, and I am on Twitter and Instagram at BenPears.
You can find me at SlashFilm on all social media. You can find this podcast, SlashFilm Daily, on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. If you want to find out more about any of the stories we talked about today, you can find them on SlashFilm.com and linked in the show notes. You can send us feedback, questions, comments, concerns, or even ask for life advice from our own Chris Evangelista at Peter@SlashFilm.com. That's Peter@SlashFilm.com. Please leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention the email on the air. And as always, go to our iTunes page. Give us a 5-star review. Write some kind words. It helps out quite a bit. Spread the word. Tell your friends. And we'll see you tomorrow. So is this Joker movie just becoming Gotham, the movie?
Did you see those pictures, Peter, of who was it? Shane West as Bane?
That looked horrible. It looked like almost like a fan production. It didn't even look like a... See, that's what bothers me about those, like, CW shows. Like, they seem so low budget and so...
Yeah, it's weird. Like, some of the visual effects look good, but the costumes are always a little, a little off to me. I don't know.
Chris, have you ever tried to watch Gotham?
No, it does not look good to me. No. that Bane does not look good, and nothing else I've seen on that show looks good, so... I have not. I will be watching Pennyworth, though. I love me a good story about young Alfred as a spy or whatever he is in that show. I can't wait on Crackle or whatever channel it's on.
Yeah, we'll be watching on Facebook Connect or wherever it is. Apple.
It's like Crackle or Epix. It's one of those things that no one actually watches.
It's Epix, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. On Epix. What even is Epix?
As far as I know, they just play Hunger Games movies over and over again, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
They're the official network of Pennyworth.
It's their flagship series.
Saving money on exterior wall lights now at Menards. Find your style with Patriot Lighting. Exterior lights enhance the look of your home. Choose from over 50 options from Patriot Lighting. Now through May 19th, get $10 instant savings on a single qualifying purchase of $100 or more on in-stock outdoor wall lights. Check out our entire selection of outdoor lights and see the rest of our deals happening now on Menards.com. Save big money at
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.